The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
And on this Thursday, greetings and welcome. I'm Jeff Munn, the radio voice of Arizona State Women's Basketball, stadium announcer for Phoenix Rising FC. It's an edifice. It's a building. It's where they play. And by the way, soccer starts in a month. I'll get that in there. But we're in for Brad today, and we're delighted to have you with us on this Thursday. Another busy day in the Valle del Sol and in the around Arizona. And what a great place to be to catch up on everything sports-wise. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. But this is a great place to come and find out everything that is going on locally. And we have a really packed show to get to. So we will get to that before. And let me just give you an overview of where we're going today. Our buddy Kyle Dodd, radio analyst for ASU men's basketball, will join us. I assume that they did not come home, even though there's 2 days in between games. So I'm assuming that Kyle is still up in the Bay Area. And we'll talk about their game here in a minute. But obviously, there's a few things to go over with KD, and we will do that coming up in our next segment. It is Thursday, or actually a couple segments away. It's Thursday. Goody at the Movies is going to take a look at three really interesting films, 12 Strong, which involves a mission post 9/11, Forever My Girl, which sounds like a tearjerker, romantic type of film, or maybe sad, I don't know. But I've kind of read the reviews on it, and Mom and Dad, which at first glance seems to be the kind of film that if your kids think your their parents are monsters, this film may confirm it. And I do have a little trivia to post past Goody, and I'm also going to get his thoughts about NFL TV on a couple of fronts, if we have time. And among other things, Eric Sorensen will be along with us. He might even be with us here momentarily on the world-famous Sports 360 AZ eCam. And is he on there?
Yeah, but I'm not world-famous at all, and my camera is really not that famous either.
It isn't? It
no.
is to me.
No.
You see, he's up there in the upper right hand. I'll take Eric Sorensen to block.
I'm just a guy.
That's an old game show reference.
Yep.
A couple of things as we get into, and Eric, you can jump in on this where you feel comfortable. A number of topics, and I before we get to the ASU men's basketball game, let's just update everybody on where things stand in terms of, number one, the Cardinals coaching search. Sounds like a couple guys are going to get second interviews. It does appear to me, without going into the specific names, that Michael Bidwell and Steve Keim are really waiting for the teams to continue to be eliminated in postseason, because it sounds like the candidate they want is probably with one of the final four teams, and obviously by rule, and I'm starting to wonder if it's an okay rule, they can't approach or offer the job to one of these assistants with the Eagles, Vikings, Jaguars, or Patriots. So I don't anticipate hearing any news prior to Sunday. There might be. You might get a surprise announcement. There is one guy, and Eric, jump in on this. I floated this the day the story broke about Bruce Arians. There's one guy out there whose name has not come up, and he was an NFL head coach last year, and he's really good friends with Bruce Arians, very close to Bruce Arians. And I'm just going to float this out and see what you think. Chuck Pagano. Would there be any interest on the Cardinals' part? Would Bruce Arians call Michael Bidwell and say, hey, this guy is an already established and successful NFL head coach. Why not go with him?
Yes, but I've heard Pagano's name more in the coordinator role of whoever gets the new coach as compared to actually the coach who gets to be the head coach.
But if he was, let's just say hypothetically, they brought him into the interview room and said, here's your new head coach. Would you be disappointed?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, and I think we're past the point of the Cardinals making a big, big splashy hire. Clearly, it's going to be a coordinator.
Right.
It's going to be, like you mentioned, someone on a staff of a team that's still alive. Not Pat Shurmur, it looks like, but that's just the reality of the situation, and I think they're taking their time, and they're doing their due diligence, and within the next, I would hope, before the Super Bowl, we'd have a head coach, because the combine is coming up relatively soon.
Right.
It's about a month and a week away. So, And you know how, you know, after the Super Bowl, we go into full flip the switch into pre-draft coverage scouting and research and everything that goes along. And Steve Keim's going to need a right-hand man to try to sift through the process of what this team needs. And
there's no question.
They have needs. There's no doubt.
Now, there's one other name, and it popped up yesterday. And I listened to the show yesterday, and I don't think Brad got to this, maybe because the news hadn't broke before he got off the air. Todd Haley not being renewed, his contract's not being renewed in Pittsburgh, and already there are some people that are saying, how about Todd Haley for head coach of the Cardinals because of his relationship with the Cardinals? Of course, I don't know what the status of that relationship is. And some people in media here in town think Todd Haley's a possibility in hopes of keeping Larry Fitzgerald from retiring. Your thoughts on that?
I think Larry Fitzgerald's going to come back for another year.
Regardless
of who the coach is. Okay. Because, as Ron Wolfley said with Brad a couple days ago, Larry likes to get paid, and Larry is tracking his own progress when it comes to where he sits atop certain lists amongst the all-time greats, and there are some goals that he can attain if he plays another year. Todd Haley, it's been so – I hate to date us, Mun, but it's been so long since he's been here.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're going back to the Super Bowl team. Is that right?
He was the OC with the Super Bowl team, and I don't know if he left the year after the following season. I think he stayed one more year and then took the Kansas City job.
I mean, it's been 9 years. 9 years since the Cardinals were in the Super Bowl.
And he's also a guy that has a tendency to rub people the wrong way. Ask Ben Roethlisberger. And that may not play well in terms of PR. See, with a head coach, you have to give off public relations and visuals and things do figure into it somewhat. And so I think Todd Haley is a guy, it's an intriguing thought, but I don't think it's a possibility. The ASU game, and I want to get to this very quickly before we get into our next topic in our next segment. They did lose at Stanford last night. To me, that game and the final score, I'm going to work it up here because I blanked on it. I was trying to keep from falling asleep last night, but they lost. They got the game to within two after being behind by double digits in the second half. They end up losing the game, and all you have to do is look at the box score, and you realize immediately, okay, here's what went wrong for Arizona State, and it comes basically down to, I'm going to get the final just to be detailed, 86-77. They got out-rebounded by 14. They got outscored in points in the paint by 16. There's your ballgame. A team that is very dependent on outside shooting from the guards. They were 8 of 21 from three-point range, which is at about at their season average. But they just were not able to do anything inside, offensively or defensively. They're a bigger team this year, but they're not a big team still. Now, we're going to have Kyle Don on a little later on, and we can get into this a little further. But if you're an ASU basketball fan and you're contemplating jumping off a ledge, get off the ledge. Come back in. Let me just ask you a question you can think about before we have Kyle on. The night of the opener against Idaho State, what were your expectations? Just think about that for a minute. You were probably thinking 17, 18 wins, a trip to the NIT would really be good progress. Well, think about where they are right now. Yeah, they're 2-4 in the Pac-12. But if the season ended today, are they in the NCAA tournament? Yes, ESPN updated their bracketology, and they still have ASU as a 7 seed in the West. And if they go to the NCAA tournament, they're ahead of schedule in the Bobby Hurley era. So everybody calm down. Speaking of calming down, Arizona football fans, and there are some media in Tucson and Phoenix that need to just cool it about Kevin Sumlin and the Rose Bowl. I will explain in our next segment why that talk's got to stop because, well, I'll get into it in the next segment. Good hire, especially when you consider the circumstances. But there are people down in Tucson that are saying, oh, he's a mortal lock to take Arizona to the Rose Bowl. Really? Based on what? We'll discuss that in our next segment. We're right up against a break, aren't we, Mr. Sorensen? We are. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back, and we'll discuss why Kevin Sumlin's a good hire, but you don't need to be booking hotels in Pasadena just yet. That's next on the Brad Sesmatch Show. There is going to be, before I get into this, Let me preface this by what I'm about to say about Kevin Sumlin at Arizona. Yes, I'm an ASU guy. I'm affiliated with Arizona State. I went to school at Arizona State. Okay, so let's get that out of the way for the people that don't realize that. I also want to just point out that what I'm doing here, what I'm about to say about Kevin Sumlin's hiring at Arizona, is not based on I'm a Sun Devil, I'm waving my pitchfork, and you guys have never been to a Rose Bowl, blah, blah, blah. This is reality. I have a very close friend, and I always tell him, I don't deal in fantasy, I deal in reality. Okay, because I get nowhere with, you know, wishing on a star and all that other stuff. Okay, so, A, Kevin Sumlin's hire at Arizona was a great hire when you consider the circumstances that Dave Hickey, the athletic director, had to operate in. They dismissed Rich Rodriguez very late in the cycle or the calendar, and they had not a plethora of candidates available. Now, having said that, yes, I think they did a wonderful job getting Kevin Sumlin in to be the head football coach. But let's here comes the reality, kids. You better brace yourselves. Kevin Sumlin was their second choice. Ken Niumatolo, who's the head football coach at Navy, a service academy, was offered the job first and turned it down. He wouldn't leave a service academy to come to Tucson. And for those of you that are saying, well, Khalil Tate didn't want to run the triple option, give Ken Niumatolo a little credit. He does run the triple option at Navy because he has to. It's a service academy. The man knows how to install a spread, throw the ball around the ballpark offense.
I'm just going to interject here real quick, Mon.
Did I pronounce it wrong?
You did. It's Niumatololo.
I left a syllable out.
You did, and that's more than forgivable. And secondly, again, it's who you believe, but Dave Hickey was asked after the press conference if Kevin Sumlin was the only person that was offered the job, and he said yes.
Okay.
But
well,
again, it's who you believe and who don't you believe.
I have no reason to doubt what he's saying. I've never met the man, and I'm not going to question his integrity. So if he says that's the case, we'll go with it. All right.
Continue on your platform.
Kevin Sumlin. You said yesterday, okay, let me point this out. You said on the show, Arizona hired an SEC head coach. Wrong. They hired an unemployed head coach. He was in the SEC. He didn't succeed enough in the SEC, and that's because that's the reason he's not in the SEC. Okay, so let's clear that up. He's not an SEC head coach. That ended when he left College Station. And I'm sorry, you and I are buddies, and I don't mean to throw you under a bus like that, but you did say he was an SEC head coach.
Well, he was an SEC
head coach. He was. But let me get to the gist of this. As soon as he was hired, and it was on a Sunday, and I was up in Eugene getting ready to do a basketball game, immediately the social media, Twitter goes nuts. Fans and media in Phoenix and Tucson are all saying, Kevin Sumlin to Arizona, get your Rose Bowl tickets now. What? The Rose Bowl. Now, Kevin Sumlin said in his press conference Tuesday, which Eric attended, that, yeah, our goal is the Rose Bowl. What's he supposed to say? Our goal is the Holiday Bowl? Our goal is the Foster Farms Bowl? Of course he's supposed to say, you know, and I'm going to get to the whole Rose Bowl idea in a minute. But let's just, in reality, Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M, his best year was 2012 when he had Johnny Manziel as his quarterback. And I think Kevin Sumlin did a fabulous job fooling America into thinking Johnny Manziel could play at the next level. Johnny Manziel, by the way, is trying to convince the Canadian League to give him a job. Okay? So you still think he's going to be the next big thing in the NFL? Ha! Anyway, here's what he did. And people will say, oh, Kevin Sumlin's a lock to take Arizona to the Rose Bowl. Well, his best year in 2012, he lost his opener to Florida in College Station, and then later in the season lost at LSU. The big game that year was the win over Alabama in Tuscaloosa, 29-24. But even with that win against Alabama, Kevin Sumlin could not figure out a way to get Texas A&M in the SEC title game. They did play in the Cotton Bowl against Oklahoma, but that was when the Cotton Bowl was not a member of the New Year's Six. The following year, 2013, Manziel's last year in the program, Sumlin goes 9-4, finishes in fourth place in his division in the SEC. With Manziel, they go to the Peach Bowl. Again, the Peach Bowl was not part of the New Year's Six, so it's not a big boy bowl at that point. They play Duke, and they win the bowl game over Duke on New Year's Eve. From there, after Manziel leaves the program, 8-5, sixth place in the division, win in the Liberty Bowl. 2015, 8-6, fifth in the division, a loss in the Music City Bowl. 2016, 8-5, and fourth place in the division, and a loss to Texas. They did in the Texas Bowl. I beg your pardon. Then 2017, 7-5, tied for fourth in the West. He did not coach the bowl game in the Belk Bowl. So let's add this up. 6 years at Texas A&M, 51 wins. He did win way more than he lost. But not one appearance in the SEC title game. Not one appearance in a big boy bowl. And you're still going to try to tell me that Kevin Sumlin is a mortal lock to go to the Rose Bowl? Wake up. He's going to be successful in Arizona. He is going to win more than he loses. He's a good football coach, and he's inheriting a good football team with a Heisman candidate at quarterback. But none of that adds up to a mortal lock to go to the Rose Bowl. Stop it. Now, he may do it. Kevin Sumlin is capable of taking Arizona to the Rose Bowl. Mortal lock? No. Nobody. There's maybe three coaches in America that Dave Heeke could have hired that you could have legitimately said, that guy will definitely take Arizona to the Rose Bowl. In order, they are Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, Dabo Sweeney. Not one of them walked through into that press conference in Tucson. So stop it. There is no such thing as a coach coming in and being a mortal lock to go to the Rose Bowl. A man that I deeply admire and have from the day I met him, Larry Marmee, who was John Cooper's defensive coordinator at Arizona State and later became head coach, had the greatest line ever. Potential is another way of saying you haven't done it yet. Kevin Sumlin hasn't done it yet. Didn't go to a big boy bowl, did not appear in the BCS, did not appear in the college football playoff at a school that has maybe five times the commitment to building a big-time football program as the University of Arizona. Oh, I saw the social media post. Hey, it's going to be a lot easier for Kevin Sumlin to get to a Rose Bowl coaching in the Pac-12. Really? Did USC, Washington, Stanford, Utah, Colorado, and Arizona State all join the Mountain West and didn't tell anybody? It's easier? Really? He's coaching against Chris Peterson, David Shaw, Chip Kelly, Kyle Willingham, Mike McIntyre, and it's supposed to be easier? Ask yourself this question. If Kevin Sumlin was still employed at the Texas A&M, would he have left to take the Arizona job? Let me answer it for you. No. It's a good program. It's a good hire. And he may take Arizona to a Rose Bowl. But to sit there and fans do this, I get it. And I don't have a problem with fans doing it. But there were media people in Tucson and Phoenix who said flat out, it's done. He's going to the Rose Bowl. Really? Based on what? Based on what? And don't tell me about Johnny Manziel, because if he's that great a recruiter, where was the next guy after Manziel? Where was the next 10-win season? He didn't have another 10-win season after Manziel's freshman year. It's a great hire under the circumstances, and he will be successful if you call success going to the Alamo Bowl or appearing in a Pac-12 title game. He will be successful. And by the way, I agree with Brad, and I know, Eric, you didn't agree with this, but I'm right with Brad on this. He has any kind of big success at Arizona, he's gone. Gone. He'll go to USC because about 2 years from now, USC will figure out once and for all that Clay Helton can't handle that program. Lynn Swann will look around and say, who's the best guy to come in and handle this program and get it back to elite status? Kevin Sumlin. Sumlin's out in 2 years. Book it. If he has any success at all, if he wins 8-9 games next year at Arizona, which is entirely possible given a really soft non-conference schedule and a favorable Pac-12 schedule and Khalil Tate at quarterback, he can win 9, maybe even 10 games at the outside. He's gone. You really think he's staying in Tucson? Give me a break.
I'll be curious, Mon, to see if Kevin Sumlin can break the trend that we've seen with U of A football.
And you mentioned this yesterday.
That trend is, Mike Stoops comes in, wins a little, the bottom falls out, he gets fired. Rich Rodriguez comes in, he gets them to a Pac-12 South title game, has a bad year, comes back with a decent year, and then everything,
we all know about that.
Yeah, everything unravels behind the scenes. Can Kevin Sumlin, for me, the reality of the situation with U of A football, if they can win 8-9 games every year, to me, that is success.
That is success. Because, I agree with
you. And I think the same thing about ASU. Until you are consistently making New Year's Six games, you are not a New Year's Six game program. You might think you are. Look at the facilities. Look at what we can recruit. Look at who we can recruit. But until you win 10, 11 games and go to those big, big marquee bowl games, you are who you are. And
right.
And that's the way it is with both Arizona schools right now.
Okay, and you're right. I'm not disagreeing with you.
ASU hasn't been to technically a New Year's Six game since
the Rose Bowl
back in 97.
Right. No, you're absolutely
really
right.
They're really no different than U of A.
You are absolutely right. All I'm responding to, and again, I think Kevin Sumlin can be very successful in Tucson, but the people who are saying it's a given that he's going to take Arizona to the Rose Bowl, calm down.
Yeah, I don't see that.
You said that when you hired John Makovic. You said it when you hired Mike Stoops, and you said it when you hired Rich Rodriguez. When are you going to learn? It's never a mortal lock. And if you really want to hear reality, ask yourself this question. Who's got better facilities, Texas A&M or Arizona? Who's got a better stadium, Texas A&M or Arizona? When Kevin Sumlin and Sean Miller arrive at Dave Hickey's office and they both need something, who's getting in first? Sean Miller. It's a basketball school. He will be successful, but don't sit there and say, get your Rose Bowl tickets now. He might take them to a Rose Bowl. I'm not saying he won't. I'm just saying stop with the mortal lock stuff, fans and media in Tucson and Phoenix, because it's not a mortal lock. Any more than it's a mortal lock for Clay Helton to go, any more than it's a mortal lock for Chris Peterson to go, any more than it's a mortal lock for David Shaw to go. Stop it. That's way out of line, and especially for media in Tucson, who ought to know better than to say stuff like that. And you know who you are. It's not a mortal lock. I hope he's very successful, and I'm glad for the people in Tucson because Kevin Sumlin will come in and conduct himself in a much better manner than Rich Rodriguez did. And I'm not talking about the office stuff. I'm talking about the disconnect he had with the people of Tucson. He clearly didn't want to be there. He made that plain when he tried to get the South Carolina job. I'm happy for the people in Tucson that they've got a football coach who's successful and wants to be there. Kyle Dodd will discuss ASU men's basketball, what's wrong and how can it get fixed, next on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Back on the Brad Sesmatt Show on a Thursday, and we have a moment to catch up with our buddy Kyle Dodd, radio analyst for the Sun Devil Radio Network on men's basketball. And first of all, before we get into talking about the game, are you still in the Bay Area? Are they making you sit for 2 days in the Bay Area?
We are. We're staying through Saturday.
Well, let me give you a few little tips. Head to Fenton's Ice Cream in Oakland, and don't let Tim talk you out of it. Tell him they have really nice sandwiches there. Just go there for dinner and make sure you get pie a la mode for dessert. So that takes care of today. Then tomorrow you have breakfast at Hobie's and your day is made right from there. So, see, I took care of you for the whole trip. And don't
I did do Hobie's.
Did you do Hobie's? Did you have the coffee cake?
I did Hobie's. I didn't do it. I haven't done it this year, but told me a couple years ago. So I did it, and I did the coffee cake, the massive coffee cake. And you
attaboy.
Always deliver. I didn't tell you, too. I did Mucci's Meatballs in Salt Lake, too. So.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Don't tell the people at Mucci's I'm coming in next week because they'll board up the place. And all right, the loss last night, there's a number of things. When you look at a box score, and I did watch the game, by the way, with the sound turned down and the radio broadcast up, which all good Sun Devil fans should do for both men's and women's basketball broadcast. watching the game and looking at the box score, sometimes what you see and what the box score shows can be two different things. But I can point to a couple of categories that tell me exactly, even if I hadn't seen the game, where the game was lost. Stanford was plus 14 in rebounding and plus 16 in points in the paint. And that to me, look, my observation is this, Kyle. ASU is a bigger team along the front line, but that doesn't necessarily make them a big team along the front line in comparison to some other teams, and Stanford is a prime example. Am I seeing it right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was part of the reason the Devils struggled. Actually, over the last couple weeks, I think just finishing the defensive possessions has been an issue with them. Teams have been able to get offensive rebounds and putbacks, and those possessions are so deflating, as you know, for a basketball team, when you get a stop on the initial thrust and you can't finish the possession and go the other way, when you're a team that relies on rhythm offensively and playing fast, you know, when you don't get stops, it hurts your break and continues from there. So I think the Devils just got to do a better job. Earlier in the year, it was a more of a gang rebounding effort, and they almost played with their hair on fire with some, you know, big sense of urgency. And right now, I just don't see them finishing possessions the same way as they were earlier in the year.
Unfortunately, with my schedule, because I do the women's games, I don't get to see you guys a lot. So last night, when I'm listening to the pregame show with you and Tim, and you pointed out, Tim asked you, said, what do you think are one of the big problems? And you mentioned the fact that a lot of teams are starting to zone ASU. How much did Stanford zone last night? I didn't think they zoned that much, did they?
No, one or two possessions here or there out of a timeout they did. So, you really can't point to the zone, that's been an issue over the last couple weeks to slowing ASU down. I think last night was more just not making shots. And Stanford went man, and the Devils got every look they wanted. They got point-blank shots at the rim. They got floaters. They got open threes, and they just couldn't get shots to fall last night, and I think that was a question, you know, throughout the preseason. Is on a night when they're not shooting well, how do they find a way to grind out and win a game like that? And especially on the road, it's so hard in the league on the road. And Stanford's playing as confident as anybody and sitting at the top of the league, and they found a way to get it done at home.
Kyle Dodd, ASU basketball radio analyst, joining us here on the Brad Sesmatch Show on a Thursday. Jeff Munn for Brad. Yeah, it's when I watch the half-court sets with this offense, I don't want to get too dramatic here. It's you can see, even on television, that they struggle at times to execute half-court sets. And you're right, this team made its name in November and December on up-tempo, playing with your hair on fire. I don't think necessarily they're a bad half-court offensive team, but they obviously, I think it's safe to say, they don't have a lot of experience with it in game situations.
Yeah, I just think everything came so easy to them. It was, you know, fast-paced and free-flowing, and everybody was making shots, and, you know, it was a fun brand of basketball. And you're going to hit parts of the season like this where you're going to have to execute, especially in league play. You know, Coach Hurley mentioned it to us last night on the pregame. A lot of times in league play and postseason play, it comes down to a more possession style game. So these are all good, you know, learning lessons for the Devils, and you know, they just got to get a little bit better at executing it. They obviously have the firepower and the shot making ability to do that. It's just a matter of executing in the half court and still being able to play your style of basketball and get out and run a little bit and get back to the way you were playing in November and December.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, and I don't remember if you alluded to this last night on the broadcast, but an old friend of ours, Bob Eager, always used to say, nobody knows you better than the teams in your own conference. And given the fact that ASU has now played close to 20 games already, and they are playing teams that know them way better than the Kansases and Xaviers of the world, I'm not saying that anything ASU did in November and December was a fluke. It wasn't. But they are playing teams now that they're very familiar with: Cody Justice, Shannon Evans, Trey Holder. They've seen film now on Remy Martin, Romello White, Daquan Lake. They even got some film now on Mickey Mitchell. So preparing for Arizona State, for these teams in the Pac-12, and I'm not using this as an excuse, but it's a fact, they can game plan a little bit better for Arizona State than a team that doesn't play in the Pac-12.
Absolutely. You talk about, you know, all year you've talked about the three senior guards, and you know, the benefit of having three senior guards, but when you get to league play, the downfall of having three senior guards is every all the other 11 teams have seen those guards for 4 years. So there's a little bit different game plan, and not to say that Xavier and Kansas and those people of the world, you know, didn't know what Trey Holder and Shannon Evans and Cody could do, but it's nothing like playing in the league for 4 years. So I think the game planning and, you know, schemes and how to guard certain guys, it's not just this year. It this goes back a couple years, and, you know, they may see things on film where I thought that Stanford, for example, did a really good job at downing ball screens last night. What I mean by that is they did not allow Trey a lot of times to come up over the top of ball screens. They just pushed him down, kind of wedged him toward baseline, forcing him to make a play. And when you're taking away half the court, you know, that's always tough. So I think, you know, certain teams in the league know certain players' tendencies, especially if you've been around the league as long as those guys have been.
Kyle Dodd, ASU basketball radio analyst, joining us. I think we've gone over a lot of the things that have gone wrong, but it all adds up to me. Every one of the things we've talked about, the rebounding, not having enough transition opportunities, everything that we've gone over, Kyle, is something that's fixable. And Bobby and his staff, and I think it's actually works to their benefit that they have 2 days to get ready for Cal, because, as I say, I think everything that's ailing this club right now is something that can be turned around. A year ago, if you say, well, they're having trouble rebounding, well, look, there's 6'5", 6'6", across the front line. There's nothing you can do about it. But to me, and you're there every day, everything that's ailing this club is fixable. Would you agree?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you're sitting at 14-4, and you know, your record is not a fluke with the people that you've beat and where you beat them and how you've beat them. So it's just a matter of regrouping and getting some things right, shoring some things up. But, you know, where in the last couple of years, and, you know, Bobby's first year, they had a really nice non-conference and got to conference play and kind of ran out of gas. But that, for me, was more personnel. It was being able to play six or seven guys, and your 4 and 5 guys are Obi Oleka and Cody Justice and those guys at 6'5", 6'6". And so, you know, the difference this year is their bodies, you know, that are available. You know, Kamani Lawrence is just still trying to find his way and get healthy. Mickey Mitchell, you know, missed all those games, just trying to, you know, slow his game down. And he's had some good games of late, but just a little bit up and down. But, you know, Daquan, the young player, Vitaly and Romello, you got to remember, are still freshmen. So those are guys that are going to go through some stretches. But the bodies and the talent and the size is there, where in the past, you know, when you're getting beat up on the glass, you really can't fault the Devils at that point, because you have, you know, six guys that you can play, and a couple of your bigs aren't really bigs.
Well, as I say, I think there's an ample opportunity to get it turned around, and Saturday night we'll see what happens at Cal. Appreciate the time, my friend. Now, remember, tonight or tomorrow night, you go to Fenton's. Don't let Healy tell you about going to Applebee's. That's a chain. You don't go to a chain. You go to Fenton's tomorrow night or tonight for dinner, and I want a full report when you get back.
Absolutely. He's sitting right next to me, so I'll tell him right now.
Yeah, tell him Munn said no Applebee's on this trip. That's out. All right, brother. Take All right. care. Safe travels.
Yeah. All right, thanks, buddy.
Kyle Dodd, he is an outstanding analyst, by the way. I love listening to his work, and he's very insightful. Reminder that our program is brought to you in part, one of our great partners is Sagicor Life Insurance Company, Wise Financial Thinking for Life. I'm a father of 2 children. I'm sure a lot of you are watching, or parents, men in particular. You have kids that you worry about, families you worry about. Well, you can ease a lot of worries by talking to a Sagicor Life Insurance representative. Very affordable, and it gives you something that is priceless, peace of mind. And we appreciate our partnership with Sagicor Life Insurance Company. We appreciate Bill Gutekunst, too, and he's got some great movies to review. And I've got a little trivia for him coming up next on the Brad Sesmatt Show. It's Thursday, and that music means one of 2 things. Either Matt Williams just hit another home run for the Giants, or AZ Central Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic Bill Gutekunst is with us. I'm going with the latter, because Matt Williams doesn't play anymore. Mr. Gutekunst, how are you, sir?
I wish I could hit a home run for the Giants.
Yeah, well, Andrew McCutchen and Evan Longoria are going to get their chance here coming up in a couple of months. We all every time I do this show,
they
are. There's a line with that, and we don't have time. But I always like to do a little trivia with you, and it usually involves somebody getting a role on television, and they were not the first choice. Okay, we're all familiar with the classic game show Family Feud. When it ran on ABC in the 70s and 80s, the host was Richard Dawson. He was not the first choice to host that show. The first choice to host that show was a Canadian-born actor who had starred in a science fiction series in the 1960s. Yes, William Shatner was Mark Goodson's first choice to host Family Feud. That is a fact. And when they brought it back, and when they brought it back on CBS in the 80s, Ray Combs was not the first choice. The first choice to host the show when it came back was Joe Namath. I'm not joking.
Now there might have been some kissing.
Yeah, well, that's true. I hadn't thought of that. All right, three interesting movies for vastly different reasons to review this week. And we're going to start with what looks to be a very powerful film called 12 Strong.
Yeah, it is.
Are we having some phone issues? Goody, we're having some phone issues. You're breaking up a little bit. Should we try it again or reconnect with him? We're going to reconnect with him. That gives me a second to tap dance a little bit here. And the films that we are going to, in case you have not seen them or you have, this is always fun. If you go to a movie and you have your own thoughts about it, it's always fun to hear what a professional film critic thinks. So the films that we're looking at today, we start with 12 Strong, Forever My Girl, and Mom and Dad. And really, the Mom and Dad one, you're thinking to yourself, oh, it must be a family film. It doesn't look like it to me anyway. But we're going to reestablish our connection with Bill Gutekunst here and get him back on a better phone line. And he is now back with us. He has improved his phone quality. And all right, we were talking about 12 Strong, which I've read a synopsis of the movie. Sounds very, very interesting.
It is. They call it sort of a, you know, the release of classified stuff for the first time. I think people have known about it, but it was right after 9/11. The first Americans, it was this group of Green Berets and Special Forces guys that the first people to go into Afghanistan and to fight in Afghanistan. And it was these 12 guys, and they had to. The terrain is so rocky and so rough that they had to go in on horses. So they were called the horse soldiers. And there's actually a monument to them at near Ground Zero now, but it's Chris Hemsworth as the leader of them, and of course he's like, you know, as heroic as it can possibly be, and Michael Shannon, who's always very intense, is one of his men, and Michael Pena, and they do the battle scenes really well. Eventually, it kind of gets in. The only problem I had with it was, if this was the only movie you'd ever seen about the war in Afghanistan, you would have thought that we won it in 3 weeks. There's not a lot of context for how it's gone since or what happened afterwards. But it is good. And an interesting little sidelight is Rob Riggle, the comic who does some, you know, he's an actor as well, obviously. He was a Marine in real life, and he plays the colonel that he served under.
Really? I didn't know. I just saw the clip. We were running the trailer, and I saw a guy that I thought, gosh, that looks like Rob Riggle, but he wouldn't do a drama or a really powerful movie. But I will say this. I hope he's better at that than he is at doing comedy, because he's not real good at comedy, at least in my humble opinion. That movie debuts tomorrow, as does what to me. Now, okay, Forever My Girl. I read the synopsis on this and did a little homework, and I thought, this must be a romantic film. But then I read it again, and I thought, okay, maybe not.
It is, I think what I said in my review is, it is sort of like they tried to combine a romantic comedy with a hillbilly Hard Day's Night. It's every cliche you've ever seen. It's not very good, but it's what happens here is that there's this country singer, and he's going to marry this, you know, his love of his life in his small town, and then he leaves her at the altar and goes off and becomes such a humongous star that, like, he's followed everywhere he goes. He can't go from his hotel room to the elevator without people, you know, the press chasing after him and stuff. It's just ridiculous. And then he ends up, they kill a character off, so he has to go back to his funeral. and he meets up with the girl again, and it turns out he has a daughter. And it's silly.
So it's not, whatever they attempted to do, they failed.
I would say so, yeah.
Okay.
I would say,
all right, we'll cross that one off the list then. Now, the third film, I said in our first segment today, the third film that you're going to review, if kids think their parents are really monsters, mom and dad might confirm it.
This is true. It's this just unhinged movie that I like, stuff like that. It's the blackest comedy where it's not great, but it's a great idea. It's pretty good, though. But all of a sudden something happens. They never really explain what it is. But it's kind of like in Night of the Living Dead or something, but where every parent wants to kill their own children. And they don't just want to do it. They, like, have to. They will stop at nothing to kill their children. They won't kill anybody else's child. Like, you can walk right past. They'll just walk right past you. But they have to kill their own children. And Nicolas Cage is the dad in question, who's the main dad. And for my money, if Nicolas Cage is a really good actor, I mean, he's done a lot of junk, but he's really good when he's really good. But he's also really good when he's bad, when he's crazy. And he is just off the hook here. And I talked to him, and there's a scene. I want to set this up. I'm going to read to you one of the things that he said. Okay. There's a scene in this movie where he goes nuts with a sledgehammer and breaks a pool. And this is, by the way, before he goes crazy. This is when he's This is when he's just mad at his wife. He destroys the pool table with a sledgehammer while singing the Hokey Pokey. And I asked him about it, and he said, and this is what he said. For instance, the scene with the sledgehammer and the pool table. I mean, that's a moment where the guy's deeply frustrated and angry. I thought about the Hokey Pokey because when I was in kindergarten, they would make me and my friends do that stupid thing. And I knew at a very early age that the Bureau of Education had designed that sort of thing to separate the discoordinated children.
Oh, did we lose him? The line drop. You dropped for a second, Bill.
Anyway, he's doing the Hokey Pokey. And he knew he wasn't uncoordinated, but he had friends who were uncoordinated. I knew what was going on, and it really pissed me off. So I said, well, I'm just going to sing the Hokey Pokey because that's probably my least favorite song in the universe and really makes me angry, and I'm sure it will probably help him inform the performance.
And he probably thought smashing a pool table, according to the song, was what it's all about. So, wow. Wow, I'm kind of intrigued at that thought. I got a minute, and I got to just tell you this, because you and I both are, we are intrigued by classic cult films. There's a TV channel now. I have it on my cable, and it's one of those digital sub-channels that the over-the-air stations in town run. There's a cable channel called Comet, and it runs science fiction movies all the time. And there have been two movies. When I saw them, I thought, oh, Goody would love this. One of them was a 1960s film called Mars Needs Women.
Yes.
Oh, you were familiar with it.
And I am.
And Yvonne Craig was in it before she became Batgirl. And then I saw another one the other night that must have been done by the same people that did the Beach Party movies, because Harvey Lembeck was in it as Varun Von, whatever his name was. And it was called The Monster in the Invisible Bikini. No joke.
That one I'm not familiar with. Main reason I'm familiar with Mars Needs Women is because this great band from Australia called the Hoodoo Gurus had a album that they called Mars Needs Guitars.
Oh, well, that reminds me of something else. I don't know how much time we've got. I played golf at the Hard Rock Golf Course in Cancun, and every one of the holes was named after a rock song. So the par three, which has a lot of sand traps, was called Enter Sandman. I had to mention that to you. I thought you'd love that. Hey, Goody, appreciate it. We need a longer segment for you and I to go over all these things, but I appreciate the time. Enjoy your weekend at the movies, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks so much.
You bet. Bill Goody Kuntz, the chief film and media critic for AZ Central and Gannett, and always good to catch up with him. Hey, a reminder, You can always come to this website, sports360az.com, get the latest on local sports, and with a Cardinal coaching search and all the things going on in recruiting, high school, college, pro sports, you get it all right here. We're very proud of our partnership with the Arizona Republic and AZ Central, and we're awfully glad you've been with us today for the Brad Sesmatch Show.